Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Seatman on Sports podcast. My name is Jimmy Seatman, and wow, do we have a lot to talk about. Was going to go into this talking about Blake Griffin and that trade and some other stuff in the NBA, the Super Bowl, but just about an hour ago, Alex Smith was traded to the Washington Redskins. He is going there for a third-round pick, a fifth-round pick, and Kendall Fuller, who is a pretty good cornerback for the Redskins. This probably means they're moving on from Kirk Cousins. Obviously, the Chiefs are going to move on from Smith no matter what. So this is a big deal. And here to talk about it, I have resident Redskins fan Dave. Dave, how are you feeling?
Hey, well, it caught me off guard. I think it caught a lot of people off guard, but I like it. I mean, it's a gamble of Alex Smith's age, but we just weren't going anywhere. Cousins was spinning wheels. He was frustrating ownership. The coach was pretty much had enough of, he kind of talks out both sides of his mouth and he wants to be a Redskin, but he'd be okay playing somewhere else. It's been going on for 3 years now. Now, granted, hey, I've said it on your show that, Redskins didn't handle it from the beginning. They kind of screwed it up, 3 years ago by lowballing them. And then he was kind of holding it over their heads the last 2 years. And they had no idea where it was going this offseason. It really wasn't looking good. You really can't. The idea what I like about Alex Smith is that we're not paying him to be the best quarterback in the league. He's going to be paid as one of the highest. Kirk Cousins wants to be paid the highest.
Well,
he wants to be the highest paid quarterback in the league.
The deal that just came out was 4 years, $94 million for Alex Smith.
Right, that's not the guarantee, but that's just Cousins wants to be in the 120.
Guaranteed. Yeah, it was
right.
$70 million
guaranteed.
So.
And Cousins is looking for 90. Cousins is looking for 90 plus million guaranteed. He wants to be in 120.
Forgot who's younger. Yeah, I mean, here's my thing, and so
yeah,
you're right.
But he hasn't accomplished. But the Redskins have lost every year with him, so it's not that big a deal. That's what I've been saying is that we had to move on. I'm saying it before any trade. We got to move on. We can't make him the highest paid quarterback. Now, Flacco, they made the highest-paid quarterback, but he won a Super Bowl. Kirk Cousins can't even beat the Giants at the last game of the year when they only won two games. He was terrible. I mean, how bad can you be? I mean, the Giants were horrible this whole year, and he played like crap the last game of the year, and he played bad the year before. All he had to do was win, the Redskins would have been in the playoffs. So I don't like giving up four. I just didn't want to go back into – giving up three, four more players to get a college quarterback that you're just guessing on. Nobody knows. Nobody has a clue if any of these college quarterbacks are going to be any good. But you're going to have to cough up three or four top picks to get one. Didn't want to do that. I didn't want to go into free agency and go for a bottom half free agent. Case Kellum, Bridgewater, hadn't played for 2 years. This is the names they're throwing at us. I'm like, I don't like that idea either. So this actually is working out pretty good.
Second
round pick.
The reported deal is a third round pick, a fifth round pick, and Kendall Fuller is the player going. And so you give up two draft picks, and you give up a guy who's a starting corner for you who looks to be somewhat promising. And I guess, if they knew that relationship was irreparable and that they were not going to be able to do anything about it, I guess, in context, this move makes sense. I guess my whole thing is they had a chance 2 years ago to sign Cousins to a very similar deal that Alex Smith just got, if not even less money. And basically they just decided not to do it. And – I mean, Cousins is kind of one of the first quarterback now to, for a long time, a lot of guys just take a long-term deal, and he was smart enough, or in his case, to just take the franchise tag, and then now he's able to hit free agency at 29 at the right time and in his career. So I mean, he definitely played it right, especially if he didn't want to be in Washington. And honestly, they never treated him like they really wanted him there either. And we can argue whether that was a right or wrong thing to do, but they could have gotten a much better deal done, you know, 2 years ago.
Right.
They just decided not to do that. Because, I mean, if they would have gotten the deal done 2 years ago, his guarantees would probably be almost up by now. I mean, most guarantees and contracts don't go beyond, you know, the first couple of years. And so, I mean, that's kind of, you know, hindsight's 20/20, obviously. But they had the chance to do it, and they just decided not to. And now they're giving up assets, you know, a third or fifth round pick, and a guy, you know, a guy who was an important part of their defense, which their defense still isn't very good. And to get a guy who's 34 years old, and yeah, he's coming off his best season ever, but I think he was in a much better offensive system, offensive place to work than in Washington. Now, you know, when it comes to production, is he going to be probably just as productive as Cousins? Sure, but I guess, you know, with quarterbacks, you never know when they're actually going to drop off. Now, you know, Smith is a guy, he's athletic, he's a guy who keeps himself in good shape. So, you know, he may not drop off right away, but it definitely is one of those things where I guess they're buying themselves time where they don't have to, you know, look for a rookie this year, or even if they do draft a rookie, you know, they can buy some time and try to develop a guy. I mean, there aren't a lot of guys who really have sat behind guys and been developed, you know, in this day and age in the NFL. Like, if you're good enough, you usually play. But, I mean, they're at least going to be competent. And I think I always thought they were going to move on from Cousins the way that relationship was. And, I mean, Cousins did a radio interview today where he basically said he's going to prioritize winning. And, you know,
he's been saying that for 3 years, Jimmy. He's a smart guy. He says all the right things. But then he'll go on another show and he'll talk out the other side. He had me so far going back and forth. Does he want to stay? Does he not want to stay? I just couldn't tell. And then he says he would be He said, I'd be okay playing on the $30 million tag. Well, I'm sure you would, but you're screwing the team that you're the quarterback for. You're not doing in the team any favors. You're just worrying about Kirk Cousins, which is fine if that's what you want to be, but just go do it somewhere else. Okay. Yes, no. They hurt your feelings a couple years ago, but they've paid you $45 million the last 2 years. And we haven't been able to afford other players. Now the defense is actually with healthy is on the rise. Now they lost so many players during the year, the defense struggled down the stretch. But the first half of the year, that looked like a much, much improved player. I mean, they lost, you know, three defensive linemen, they lost their safeties, cornerbacks, linebackers. But now maybe they can afford to sign Breland. They were going to have to let Breland go if they had to pay Cousins. And so now maybe they can afford Breland. Now they can afford the linebacker, what's his name, from Zach Brown. So now they have a little extra money to work with because the average is going to be about $10 million less than what they were paying Cousins. And they already had some money to work with anyway. So hopefully now they can afford – now they don't have to waste – three number one picks on a college quarterback. You have no. We already did that once, and that got screwed us. That screws you for 5 or 6 years if that quarterback don't work out. So now they can go pick a top notch defensive player in the first round, in the second round, and maybe get an offensive lineman. Get a receivers. So anyway, I think they have more flexibility. The coach is happy that he has a quarterback that's committed to the team for the next 4 or 5 years. It was hard for Gruden to work with Cousins because he didn't know if he was going to be here from year to year. So I don't know. I'm happy. I'm glad that Cousins is gone. I'm tired of talking about Cousins. And he'll be fine somewhere else. He's a good quarterback. He could get better. Who knows?
So just off the top of my head, some teams that could be interested in Kirk Cousins. The Broncos, the Jets, Browns, the Jaguars, a couple of those teams.
Yeah,
if you were
have a lot of
Cousins,
options.
If you were Kirk Cousins, mm-hmm. Where would you go?
I think you got to look at, Jaguars, and you saw how much they have to work with, would be an attractive place to go. You know, Kansas City, I guess they're going to go with Mahomes. I think you didn't mention the Cardinals. I think they're probably going to be in the mix. Browns, I wouldn't go there. You know, it's just a mess there. Ownership's terrible. Broncos, I don't know. Is their defense starting to slide now? You know, defense only has so many years in them before players start declining. So, maybe they still have something still there. Maybe even Minnesota. Who knows?
Yeah, no, somebody mentioned that, and I was like, I mean, it makes sense. Like, I mean, I think the two best spots for him, if he wanted to win right away, and I mean, a lot of these teams are going to be able to offer him similar money. No one's going to. Maybe the Browns could offer him like $35 million a year or something, but no one's probably going to do that. So all of these teams have the money to offer, and I think the two best places would be the Jags and the Vikings. And I mean, it would be kind of weird for the Vikings to move on from Keenum after this year, but I mean, he obviously has his limitations, and those are both teams with really, really great defenses. The Vikings especially have really good receivers. Kirk's a smart guy. He's going to do his homework. I think the Broncos, they sound enticing from like a legacy type thing, but I'm just not sure their team is that good anymore. And if his priority is winning, then, I mean, we'll see though. We'll see at the end of the day. Money does matter in these situations. If some team offers him $5 million more a year or, you know, $30 million more guaranteed, I mean, that's pretty persuasive as well. But he's the best free agent quarterback since Drew Brees. I mean, you just never see even like adequate quarterbacks hit free agency almost ever.
True. No, that's true.
And they're always for weird circumstances. I mean, Brees had his shoulder injury, and a lot of people didn't think he'd be able to play football again. You know, same thing. You know, Peyton Manning was cut. But Peyton Manning was a free agent, you know. But, again, very unique circumstance, you know. We weren't sure about him. So Cousins was kind of the same way, his battle back and forth with the Redskins. You know, and if his goal was to get out of being with the Redskins, he got that accomplished, and now he's going to be able to choose where he goes, which is not what a lot of players get to do, especially quarterbacks. Usually once you're a franchise quarterback for one team, you're pretty much stuck there.
Yeah, that's true. It takes an organization like the Redskins to put a quarterback out on, you know, not to be able to sign him and put him out there on the free agency. So it'll be interesting to see how the rest of it goes, the free agency. I mean, in the off season, Redskins already, re-signed Mason Foster, really good for us. He's been a really good linebacker for us, signed him for a pretty cheap deal. They could lock up Zach Brown, off to a good start, but they're gonna have to find they're gonna have to find him receiver. That's for sure. Daniel Thompson could still be fine. He's going in his third year. I mean, we saw a lot of progression in the second half of this year with Thompson, but we definitely need another receiver for sure. And then hopefully if he gets his tight end back. He didn't play almost the whole year.
I mean, did they even trust Jordan Reed to play at this point?
Yeah, I think you got to, man. I mean, you still got some money, a lot of money tied up in him. And hell, hopefully having a whole year off, since he's about as healthy as he'll ever be. Hopefully he's healed up and healthy, and hopefully he'll be a beast. But, I mean, you just don't know. Football is just such a crapshoot. You just don't know, you know. He's just too young, and just to and his injury wasn't like some major crushing injury. It was just, so hopefully he's cleared up some of his concussion issues. He cleared up his bad toe, you know, whatever else he had going on. So hopefully he's just ready to go. So like I said, I just think it's a little bit of a stopgap, but it's a good stopgap. I mean, I said it before we traded. I said during the season, Alex, he looked great. I said that's the best I've seen him look in his whole career. The way he's moving around, you don't see guys running at 32, 33. Normally they're done running. I mean, you already see other guys, you know. I mean, Michael Vick was done by his late 20s. I mean, he got to stop running, get hit. I mean, Russell Wilson ain't running like he used to. It's just hard, but he runs around like he's 25. He started taking his game to a different, like you said, it's a whole different team, and you know, we just have to see how it works out. You just don't know, I just don't know, but it's exciting. It kind of lit things up a little bit tonight,
Definitely something different. Again, losing the third and fifth round pick hurts. Although if Kirk Cousins signs as a free agent, they'll probably get a compensation pick in 2019. So I guess they can see that as kind of a little bit of less of a swap. At the end of the day, I think the Redskins are trying not to go back into a mode where they're in complete rebuild mode. And like I said, it's hard to find your next quarterback while you already have one on the roster that's helping you win, because there's not a lot of examples of guys who sat for 2 or 3 years that became really successful as of late. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is always used as that example, but Aaron Rodgers was behind, like, one of the best 10 quarterbacks of all time. You know, like, it's just a completely different scenario. So a lot of guys these days come in and start right away because they need to figure out whether they're good or not, you know, before their rookie contract is up, you know. It'll be interesting.
Think about what you just said. It's not really, even though it's 5 years, but think about it as 3 years. You know, hopefully you can get some of that guaranteed money after 3 years, and maybe it is only 3 years. So I think we can get 3 years out of them, and hopefully you start grooming somebody that, you know, or finding somebody to take over then, but at least it gives you a little bit of time. Maybe it will be 5 years. Maybe it will be good. But who knows?
That would have him at 39, and while Tom Brady has definitely proven that quarterbacks can play for a while, but you're right, Alex Smith is competent. It's going to be a lot easier to swallow losing Cousins.
A lot of good quarterbacks can go in their late 30s. That's not a big deal for a quarterback, especially a guy who never gets hurt. Those guys they're just a little bit special. They can go into their late 30s. But you see a guy like Eli Manning already falling off tremendously. Well, you see Alex Smith playing his best at this age, you know. So we'll see, we'll see. I mean, we'll just have to wait and see. But, I think it's okay. You're not going to get a perfect move. You got to give up something. You got to give up something to get something. Kansas City ain't just going to give them away.
No, and they had the Browns competing with them, too. The Browns were also interested. So, at the end of the day, I mean, the way I see it, you're talking about giving Alex Smith, $70 million guaranteed going into his age 35 year and giving Kirk Cousins $90 million guaranteed. I think I would have rather done the latter, but obviously, the Redskins thought otherwise.
But he didn't take it. He didn't want to take it. He's going to string it out. He could have signed that right now, but he wants to wait till free agency. Okay, well, we don't want to wait because you're going to fuck with us, and then maybe Alex Smith will be gone. Oh, sorry, we're on the air. Sorry about that, people.
It doesn't matter. Earmuffs, children.
plus we're at the 11 o'clock hour, too.
I understand. So speaking of a player who – maybe often gets injured. The thing that I thought we were going to talk about first today was going to be Blake Griffin being traded to Pistons for Tobias Harris, Avery Bradley, Boban Marjanovic, a first-round pick, and a second-round pick. To me, it's one of those trades where usually you grade trades on who got the better player, and I think the Pistons got the better player. However, Blake's contract moving forward is so onerous. And for a guy who he's adjusted his game and he's much more ground bound than he ever used to be. And he's gotten better and he's developed a 3-point shot, but
yeah, it's not a great 3-point shot.
In 3 years from now, they're going to be paying Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin, if they're both on the team, and over $70 million combined for both of them. And I think the Clippers, I didn't love him signing for that extra fifth year when he signed the contract with the Clippers, but that's what they had to do to re-sign him. And I think they were smart to get out of it early.
I agree.
Bradley and Tobias Harris are good players. Again, not as good as Blake Griffin, but good, solid players. And, you know, if they, you know, trade DeAndre Jordan, trade Lou Williams, and get some more draft picks, they could have a lot of flexibility in the future and maybe be a destination that some people want to go. But obviously with Griffin, I view that contract as a negative asset, and the fact that the Pistons treated it as a positive asset, giving up good players and draft picks for him, I think it's a win for the Clippers, even though they're not better today. That contract would kill them, you know, 2 or 3 years from now.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that was stupid to, you know, I think, to give it to him in the first place. But I haven't liked him. I know he's exciting. He's electrifying with his dunks. Like you say, he's a little less of that now with the injuries. He's a very good player. I just never saw him as a player who's going to take you to the promised land. You always saw in the playoffs, that's where he struggled the most. When the game gets tighter, you're not getting so many fast breaks and so many easy alley-oop dunks, and you're playing better competition. All that goes away, and then we got to see what kind of player you really are. And he was just good, not good enough. Played him too much. Now I see Detroit. It looks to me like Van Gundy is sort of his last hurrah. He saw that, you know, the team he put together is not doing it. He's tried to redo this team 3 or 4 times, and now he's just kind of going for it. Let's give up, nice pieces. Nothing great. I mean, Harris is a nice piece. Of course, Avery Bradley's a nice piece, but they're not going to do nothing special. And they're hoping, and from what I'm hearing, they got this new arena downtown. Nobody's coming. It's empty. They need to get some. They're hoping that maybe they can get some bodies in the seat. So I don't know. You know, can he stay healthy? How's he going to work with Drummond? Is Reggie Jackson ever going to, you know, come back and be consistent, point guard? I mean, at times he looks really good, and other times he just doesn't. So I just think it's kind of a mess there, but I understand Van Gundy giving it a shot, and he's going to go down in flames. And I think it's a good move for the Clippers. They're free. You know, if they can get rid of, like you said, Williams and the big center there, you know, free up some money, and then maybe they can go after Paul George and LeBron or something, you know? So,
Paul George is an acclaimed lifelong Clippers fan, so.
Yeah. I mean, you see how good he is against the Wizards tonight if you watch that game. I mean, that guy is just really good on both sides of the ball.
He's just such a great defender. I mean, really, truly a two-way player, and especially ever since the last probably month or so, Carmelo has taken a step back from his load offensively. George has really shined, and he just got into the All-Star game because of the Cousin injury and stuff like that. But obviously, the West is loaded, so, you know, not getting in the All-Star game immediately wasn't a discredit to him. Although he did make a comment, I think like a week ago or so, where he did say it's going to be really hard for him to leave a place like OKC. But, you know, I think it all depends on how they do in the playoffs. You know, if they go to the second round and go toe-to-toe with, like, Golden State for 6 or 7 games, I think he stays. If not, I mean, it really depends. I mean, I haven't bought into the fact that he's going to go to the Lakers. I mean, I think the Lakers are just so bad right now that, yeah, like, you know, if they were to add, for example, Paul George and LeBron James, they'd be a really good team. But, like, I mean, honestly, would they be better than the Warriors or the Rockets, even with those two guys? It just doesn't seem like, I don't know, it's at least to me. Paul George, really good. I think the Clippers got the better end of this deal. I think, you know, I always think anytime a general manager is trying to save his job in any sport, you should probably just fire him then and there, because that's when they tend to make stupid things where they don't care about the long-term outlook of the franchise. Because that's what
true.
You should do as a GM. And when you get desperate, you make desperate moves. And, I mean, so, yeah, they have Blake Griffin and they have Andre Drummond and, you know, The Pistons have been in a skid recently because Jackson has been hurt, and even though he's not the best point guard in the world, he is at least acceptable at the position and a guy who's a true starter. But, I mean, they really are capped out going forward. I mean, they don't have really any significant way to get better. Now, they can also look at it as, Avery Bradley was going to be a free agent. We weren't going to re-sign him probably. Tobias Harris. And we got off of Boban's salary and then gave a first-round pick. So I could see them seeing it as we really just gave up Tobias Harris and a first-round pick of, like, what we actually valued. But still, I mean, it's really more a Blake contract than anything. He's still a really good player. But it's a guy who can't really be healthy. And, again, the last 2 years of that deal, he's going to be making $35 million and $39 million. I mean,
yeah,
it's a lot of money. And so, I mean, I could see that working. I could see him and Drummond being a good pair, being a good duo. But I don't think even if they retool next season, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs this year because I think it'll take some time to, get used to playing with each other and stuff like that. Kind of like what, happened with New Orleans this year with Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins. But I think, even next year, I mean, what are they, like, seventh or eighth best team in the East? I mean, I understand they needed to do something. The Pistons, were kind of trapped to where they were. But I don't know. I think at the end of the day, I think the Clippers are definitely going to, they probably like what they got. They got an expiring deal. Tobias Harris is still 25. He's a guy who put some pretty good numbers, good player. And they got a first-round pick. So right now the Clippers have two lottery picks right now. And if they wanted to, they could just keep those and draft young players, or they could trade them for, a star that they're looking for, or at least give them options.
And I think it is a protected pick, though, like in 1 through 4.
It's
for a couple of years.
But the Pistons probably aren't going to make the playoffs this year, and they'll probably have a lottery pick. And, I mean, with the new rules not being implemented yet, if they have, like, the 12th, 13th, 14th pick, they're probably not going to jump into the top three. But you never know what could happen. But yeah, so I think the Clippers should be happy with what they got. And like I said, they can flip DeAndre for a first and maybe flip Lou Williams for like a late first. Definitely some contenders that could use Lou Williams. They could end up having like 4 first-round picks at the end of this, and doing at least have the flexibility to do that with what they want. Because I also do think that the Clippers don't necessarily want to give DeAndre his next contract. He's going to be 30 years old when it starts, and you're talking about a guy who a lot of his game is based off athleticism. So the back end of that contract wouldn't be great too. And they'd have bird rights on him, but they'd probably have to overpay him. So I kind of like this approach of maybe starting clean, and they could also maybe even flip Avery Bradley again to a team that wants him too, maybe like a Cleveland or something like that. So there's a lot of options they have, and I like flexibility when it comes to things like this in the NBA because as of right now, there's a ton of teams who have zero flexibility whatsoever because of the summer of 2016.
Yep. Yeah, did you watch the Wizards game tonight against the Thunder?
Yeah, I did. I watched it, at least most of it for the most part.
I thought Satoransky really held his ground pretty good, kept Westbrook under, it might have been his lowest scoring game in his life, 13 points. Satoransky's just he just doesn't turn the ball over. This is what I like about him. I mean, the guy was under the pressure, what they were putting on him, and the bumping, the intimidating they were trying. They were physical with him. They were pushing him around. But I tell you, that boy he didn't buckle. He blocked his shot on a powerful drive down the hoop. He had some deflections, some steals. But we started to lose it with 4 minutes to go. He didn't put him back in, Brooks, until about 4 minutes ago, and he settled things down because we get ball movement. You can see against the Thunder, man-to-man defense, they're fantastic, but they cheat and they trap so much. You just move the ball, and you can get open shots all day long. And when that's when we played our best is when we move the ball. But when Beal is at running the point and he's just him and Gortat, he's just dribbling and dribbling and dribbling and dribbling, it just bogs it. And then that's where they're good on defense. That's when they get steals and deflections, and then they're on the fast break. But I'm telling you, Satoransky, if he would just be a little more aggressive scoring-wise, he just wants to pass so much. He's just such a point guard. He just has to – he gets 6'7", and he moves his feet. I think he really surprised Westbrook tonight with his footwork, his size. It's 6'7". I mean, he's blocking some shots and deflecting the balls. But he's just got to – there's a couple times he gave up a couple little 12-foot jumpers that he can hit, but he's trying to make a – trying to get closer and give someone else a shot. But otherwise, I just like the way they played. I just – you can see it's going to be tough without Wall for 2 months, and now we know why Wall was slacking, because he was hurting, and he just was hurting. And that's why he wasn't playing defense. You got to play defense. And he was hurting when he wasn't playing defense. It just bogs down the whole team. If one guy ain't playing, he was just giving what he had on offense, and now he didn't have much on defense. What a difference, though. No. Frazier really hadn't played much at all, but coming off the bench, changing the pace, pushing the ball up as fast as he could. Porter, they just played tough. They had to. That's a rough. Tough team. They foul constantly. Adams inside is a physical presence. He's just pounding on you and pushing you. And he got that. Was it him? Oh, Westbrook got that flagrant foul. And he like tomahawked Porter going for a layup. And then Adams gave an elbow to Porter's head. I mean, he was out for. You know, hopefully, thank God. I said, oh, my God, he'll be out for 2 weeks with a concussion. Luckily, he came back. But anyway, so I don't know what they're going to do.
An impressive performance. I did like the ball movement, especially early on in the game. OKC is one of the best defenses in the league. Now, losing Andre Robertson for the season definitely hurt their defense. They were allowing about 10 points less per 100 possessions with Robertson on the floor. Basically, when Robertson was on the floor, they had, like, the best defense in the league, and when he was off of it, they were a little below average. So, you know, as much as he can't shoot and come playoff time, he's a little bit of a liability. With him and Paul George as, like, your two wings, I mean, they just suffocate people. And it's been with Adams as well, too, and it really takes a load off Carmelo, who, you know, even if he tries – on defense, just doesn't have the foot speed anymore to really be a great defender. But there's been a lot of injuries in the NBA. I mean, Kevin Love, he's going to be out 6 to 8 weeks now with a hand injury that he suffered tonight. It was the last thing the Cavs needed. That's interesting on that front because they've kind of been looking to trade Channing Frye in some of these trades they've been looking at. Well, now they literally only have Thompson and Frye as their two bigs left really on the roster. I don't know if like they could still trade him at this point. And Thompson is someone who they're still trying to get back in the flow coming back from an injury. And, Kevin Love, again, you know, he's a guy who is a part of a lot of criticism with the Cavs, and they're holding team meetings, blaming him for stuff and things like that. But I mean, he's still their second best player this year by far. And they already were in a little bit of a skid. And I mean, I don't know if you watched any of the Cavs Pistons game, but it's, you know, Isaiah Thomas still just looks like he just doesn't have it. I mean, he drives with the paint, and kind of just goes up in the air and doesn't know whether he wants to shoot or pass. And I think it's kind of a mistake to think that he would just come back from his hip injury and be the same. And I mean, obviously he's just horrendous defensively, and they gave up over 120 points again tonight. So they're a little bit of a mess. I mean, they're gonna make something during the deadline, and I think it's starting to at least creep in my head more and more that the Cavs are not really the sure thing that we all thought they were. But at the same time, you know, with Boston, I mean, they really just, you know, a lot of their guys who were performing really well early in the year, Tatum, Smart, Brown. A lot of those guys aren't shooting as well anymore. You know, it's funny. You know, Jason Tatum is no longer the best three-point shooter in NBA history anymore. That fell off a little bit. And so they just have trouble scoring, even though their defense is really good. And I think come playoff time, that'll be exposed. And as much as Toronto is playing really, really well, and DeRozan's having his best season ever, I just, until they can win in the playoffs and DeRozan and Lowry don't just, like, you know, come up short, I'm just not going to be able to trust them. But I don't know. I mean, it's just, at least for once, you know, in the last couple of years, it's at least kind of open, which I guess kind of makes the John Wall injury suck a little bit because, you know, even if he comes back, you know, the Wizards probably, he probably won't be full strength for at least a while. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, at least the East is somewhat interesting now. And then you also have the DeMarcus Cousins injury too, which is a horrible blow for the Pelicans. And they were basically a three-man team, and they were actually playing. They were on like a five-game win streak for the first time in their season. They were hovering around 500, and then they lose Cousins. And that'll be interesting to see how that impacts his free agency too, because there's maybe like two or three guys in NBA history who have ever come back from an Achilles and ever really been close to the same. One of them being Dominique Wilkins, actually, at like age 32, surprisingly. But outside of that, there's a long list of guys who tear their Achilles and are just never the same.
No, no, true. Yeah, and then you see with Cleveland, you know, Isaiah Thomas, you know, he just can't stop running his mouth. I mean, he's the new guy there. He's been hurt all year. He finally's playing some, and he's out there calling out people. And then he's taking, you know, and then, you know, he's used to having the ball and taking lots of shots, especially in the fourth quarter. And then, you know, the other night he doesn't even get in the fourth quarter because they have so many options. And then, you know, the other players on the team are questioning some of his shots. And he's like, well, what'd you want me here for? That's what I do. I take lots of, you know, I take shots. You don't want me to take shots? Why'd you come get me? Yeah, a lot of, you know, a lot of issues there. Then they're talking about going to get another point guard. They're talking about, you know, going for George Hill and like you were saying, now they were going to use, you know, Channing Frye to get him and Shumpert.
I think Phil could help him. He's a, you know, long rangey guy. You know, 6'4", but he has like a 6'10" wingspan. They need guys who are somewhat of two way players, and I think the compensate they were going to give up like Frye, Shumpert in the second round pick. So, and Shumpert's a guy who doesn't even play for them. And Frye, yeah.
So, they're paying lots of guys. They're paying lots of guys lots of money to do the same thing. You know, I'm sorry that they're no good, but you paid them.
Yeah, well,
J.R. Smith a four.
J.R. Smith,
a 4-year contract. He got Dwayne Wade there. You know, a Hall of Famer. He's 6'5" and got long arms. But you know, these guys just can't play anymore. I mean, they're winding down. They can only play. They're more helpers than. They're paid as starters, though. You know?
The big thing the Cavs have lost, in my opinion, is a lot of shooting. I mean, when they've added guys like Wade, like Jeff Green, you know, playing, you know, and Crowder just not having a good year shooting, is that they just don't have a lot of good shooters. And there's a lot of times when they're on the floor and it's like, I don't know, it's like LeBron, Jeff Green, Dwayne Wade, Tristan Thompson, and Kyle Korver. And everyone's like, oh, why isn't Kyle Korver getting shots? It's like, because they're chasing this dude on the three-point line like he's frickin' Steph Curry because they know nobody else on the Cavs can shoot. I mean, it's like three people are following him on all these little curls that he does. And Korver is one of those guys who, if he's not getting the ball off screens and stuff like that, he's really, you know, he's someone who kind of needs to be active in the offense. And if he's not getting touches, he just doesn't perform as well. And so, I mean, I think just in general they need to shake things up just because obviously they're, you know, with stuff in the locker room. And they're, you know, they can make incremental improvements, and I think they need more two-way players. I mean, that's what they wanted Crowder to be, was a two-way player, but he just hasn't been good for whatever reason this year. I mean, they're hedging on everything, really. I mean, Dan Gilbert's basically put his foot in the ground and said, you know, I don't – like, the reason the Hill trade didn't go through is because they asked Hill to you know, make his salary non-guaranteed next year? And obviously he said no. He's not.
Yeah.
You know? So that's why that trade didn't go through, because they think LeBron's going to leave, and he probably is going to leave. I mean, like, if I was LeBron, I wouldn't stay there either. I mean, they've exhausted everything they can, and they just have an old roster. And obviously trading Kyrie was a mistake for them this year. I mean, part of the reason they did that package, because they wanted the Brooklyn pick, you know, they could have probably gotten better players to help them win right now. But then they fired their GM, and then, you know, and then made that trade, and then they really wanted the Brooklyn pick. And, you know, unfortunately, the Brooklyn pick isn't going to help them this year. So, you know, it's kind of a mess. I'm sure they'll do something, because they kind of have to do something. They could go after, you know, a guy like Hill or a guy like DeMar Carroll, you know, a guy like Kent Bazemore, someone who's more of a two-way player who can shoot threes and play some modicum of defense. So I think they'll do something, but I thought it was going to be a pretty quiet trade deadline all in general, but then I also didn't expect Blake Griffin to get traded. So it's definitely been interesting. I'll ask you another question. Do you think the Rockets, I mean, so I think what they're like 20-1 when Chris Paul plays this year. Do you think the Rockets are like legit contenders to maybe even beat the Warriors?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just hard for anybody to beat them four times in a seven-game series. But I think they're contenders to do it, yeah. They're healthy. They seem to have enough. I like how Capella's really coming along at that center position. I think it's working out a little bit better than I thought with Paul and Harden. Paul realizes that they're not going to win unless Harden handles the ball. I mean, but he doesn't have to handle it all the time, which I think helps Harden. It's just too much for one guy. This is what I was saying about John Wall. And that's why with Westbrook, it's just tough for one guy to make all these decisions throughout the game. You just put the ball in one guy's hand, and he's constantly got to do everything. It's just hard. I think it's better for the team if you just have ball movement and they share the ball. And at times, you show off your guard skills. But there's so many times where the Wizards will get a rebound and Wall's got to come back to get the ball. I'd rather get the ball up to the guy who's farther up the court first, you know. And then, you know, I just think I don't like giving my point guard the ball right as he's standing at the free throw line. I'd rather get the ball up towards half court, and then the next pass can be for a dunk or something. Let's get the ball up the court faster. The Wizards have too many guys that can handle the ball where they got to worry about giving it to one guy. You know, you got Porter, you got Beal. You just get the ball out and let's go. And Wall can be part of that. But just giving him the ball all the time, you just see, it just makes it easier for the other team to defend you. And you can see Westbrook, as great as he is, but Paul George handle the ball. You know, I mean, it's just better. I think you'll win. You have a chance to win. You just, as great as Westbrook is, I just don't like the way he plays. I think he just plays, just out of control to the point where it's just hurting the team concept. And I really don't think Billy Donovan is that great a coach. He just plays everybody 40-something minutes. I mean, use your other guys on the bench. I mean, that's your job, the coach, like Popovich. You know, he's always got guys out there you never heard of. And you're like, wow. But they play good as a team because they move the ball. And a lot of these guys can shoot when they're open. In the NBA, you can see. You watch games. I watch games too much. The guys, if you just move the ball, there's open shots all over the place because the guys are helping too much. Over-aggressive, if you just share the ball, everybody can get shots. And then ball can come back to the shooter. Beal can get the ball back. He doesn't have to dribble around three, four guys, move the ball around. The team wants to get you the ball anyway. Maybe we can get you a better look. But you saw even when he passed at the end to get other guys' shots, it just makes the team better. And like that's why the Warriors, you know, Steph Curry can handle the ball as good as anybody. But how many times do you see him bring the ball up the court? Not a whole lot. I mean, he shares it with three other guys. So then everybody can get into the offense. Everybody can be moving and cutting. And is that way you're not so obvious on what you're doing, you know. So, but
Your favorite guy, James Harden, had a 60-point triple-double tonight.
You know what? I saw that pop up. Not surprising. I mean, and here's another guy I just don't like the way he plays. I just don't like a guy that dribbles into the lane and he's just trying to draw fouls. But he can shoot, and his handle's good. I just don't like a guy that's just purposely always trying to draw fouls. The way he's bumping into you. He's really unique with his arms. I've never seen a guy that's able to get his arms out there where people are slapping at him. But he gets so many calls. It's just amazing.
Well, he's just great at baiting people.
Yeah, he is. He's something. He's an original. You know, again, I just
skill.
Don't like that
getting
type.
Getting to the free throw line is a skill.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, you saw – I was just amazed how many fouls the Wizards were getting called and the Thunder weren't getting as many called. And then they argue on everything. Luckily they didn't get three guys thrown out. They charge the referees. They jump up and down. They slam the ball down. I mean, they all had one technical, but nobody got two. But surprising. And they're physical. Oh, my God, they're physical. Oh, man. They're bumping you all the time, pushing. I just saw Carmelo just come down and just shove Satoransky out of the way and shove someone else out of the way. I'm like, there's three referees out there. Does anybody see him just pushing people out of the way? No, I guess not. It's going to be interesting with all these injuries. Let's see how these teams can pull together, see what kind of moves they make with the deadline getting close. You know, the Pelicans, I just got to crush them because, I mean, they were probably thinking of trading Cousins. I mean, I know they don't want to pay that guy $180 million because you don't know what.
I don't think they have to. I mean, I think they could maybe get a slight discount. I mean, if I was a team that had cap space, I would take a shot on a guy like Cousins because, I mean, yeah, he's coming back from Achilles, but, I mean, he was playing like a top, you know, top 10, top 15 player this year. I mean, he was having his best year ever. And, you know, there's teams like the Mavericks and the Suns that don't have centers that have cap space. I mean, what else are you going to do with it? You know, like sign another Jared Dudley or Harrison Barnes. I mean, you know, so, I would take a shot on him. But I think the injury almost helps the Pelicans. Now, the thing is with the Pelicans is they have just no clear path for any really, like, success because they're so capped out. After this year,
Davis has
two more years left. What?
Yeah. Did you say the Mavericks?
Yeah. Why not?
Can you see who the coach of the Mavericks is? You think Rick Carlisle could get along with Boogie Cousins? That'd be impossible.
He gets along with Dennis Smith, who makes a lot of boneheaded mistakes. So I think Carlisle has grown a little bit as a coach. But
yeah, did you see what he told that guy the other night in the Wizards game? He told me get the fuck off the court. He just told his player, get the. He got two technicals arguing a call. This guy, Zila or something. And he came over and he's like, we got a 13-point lead. Why are you getting two technicals? That's something Cousins would do. And he was arguing with Carlisle and you could just read his lips. It was clear. He said, get the
fuck
out of here. And he pointed to the shower.
Carlisle had Ron.
He's George
Carl. Carlisle had Steven Jackson. Carlisle had Deshaun Stevenson. I think he could deal with it. Like, I mean, he had five years. And Steven Jackson on the same team. Well, they can't offer him 5 years. They can only offer him four. Maybe Cousins takes 1 year and tries to get back on the market. I mean, I'm just saying, it's not like the Mavs are doing anything better with their cap space. Cousins is a guy you take a shot on if you need to. There's not a lot of teams that have cap space this year, so. So there's like six teams that'll have cap space. So I guess
now,
maybe seven.
But now we don't have
the Clippers.
Right, but now with that injury, right now, they don't have to pay him. But also, not only do they lose a good player, but they could have probably got a nice change, some nice picks back for Cousins. So the Pelicans just got screwed on that.
I mean, I don't think they're ever gonna. I think they were aiming for the playoffs. I mean, that's why today they tried to trade for Mirotić, although that went through because he vetoed it. But the Pelicans are they have a desperate front office as well. I mean, they kind of have one of those, we don't make a playoffs, we're getting fired. And I mean, the Pelicans have fucked up, having Anthony Davis so bad. I mean, they've traded every single draft pick they've had. They've traded their 2013, 14, 15, 16, and 17 draft pick all since Anthony Davis has been there because they were so afraid that he was going to leave. But it's just like they were so impatient. I mean, they traded two picks for Drew Holiday. They traded a first-round pick for Omer Asik and then signed him to a 5-year, $50 million deal. They traded another first-round pick. They rushed into it too much. They should have just built a young team around Anthony Davis, and then they made weird signings like Tyreek Evans and things like that. They rushed into trying to be a team that had a bunch of stars, and that's why you don't trade a bunch of draft picks away consecutively. I mean, if you're a good team, you can do it, but the Pelicans were a lottery team. I mean, they lost two lottery picks in a row from that Drew Holiday trade, and just helped the Sixers out. So, they royally fucked it up, and Anthony Davis, no matter what he says. They just don't have a path to get better. I mean, they're paying him a bunch of money. They're paying Drew Holiday a bunch of money. They're still paying Solomon Hill. They're still paying Omer Asik. They're still paying Etwan Moore. I mean, they just don't have any clear way to get better. And I mean, I think they should at least entertain the thought of trading Davis. Now, probably not going to do it this year. But I mean, if Boston comes to you and offers you a bunch of draft picks and Tatum and Brown and you take that, if you're the Pelicans, because and they're probably not going to do that because they've been very stern about not wanting to trade Anthony Davis. But, I mean, are they even going to be able to be a 50-win team in the next 2 years? I mean, it's just one of those things. I would move on if I were them. But obviously, it's just harder to move on from a guy like Anthony Davis than it is to just say it.
Yeah.
I think it's probably
yep,
it
good point.
For the NBA, we finally had some MLB stuff happen. It seems like,
yeah.
Especially with the news that the Brewers are also pursuing Yu Darvish, that we now live in a world where only one baseball team exists.
kind of funny that it's the Brewers, right?
Yeah, the Brewers have signed by far the biggest contract of the whole offseason. They trade for Christian Yelich, signed Lorenzo Cain, kind of have a glut of outfielders now, although they're saying Braun maybe moved to first base. It's a team that won 86 games last year, and hitting wasn't really their problem, but they definitely got better. Yelich and Cain, were probably both top 10 center fielders last year, so they're both really good in the field, and then now you have them really good hitters as well, too. I mean, obviously they're being aggressive and they think they have the window to win. I mean, and it's a classic case of, they traded a guy who was a top 20 prospect, but they kind of saw it as Yelich being a proven commodity and someone who can help them win right now. And then with Cain, I think they think he'll age well. And he's someone who's not only a good hitter and good fielder, but a really good base runner as well. Guy who'll steal 20, 25 bags a year. So, but I love him. I think they need some more pitching, but I think they see that.
I was surprised. I was surprised they went after Cain once they had Yelich. They already got some good young outfielders. They had to overpay to get Cain, and nobody was offering Cain 5 years. That was the only team. That's why he took that deal. He was only getting 4-year deals. Probably he wasn't even in the $16 million range. It was probably more like 4-15 a year, so he was probably getting more like 60. So he ended up getting to $20 million more. Now I understand that's the only way Milwaukee's probably going to get a free agent. They're going to have to overpay. But that's what you got to do. You know, that's what the Nationals had to do with Jason Worth. You just got to overpay a year or two, you know, just so he'll come. Otherwise, there's no reason to come, especially when, you know, the money's sort of drying up on all these big guys. You're probably going to see a similar thing with, you know, who's left, you know. You know, they pretty much are telling, you know, Hosmer, Moustakas, J.D. Martinez. They're telling you guys, I need $200 million players. I mean, calm down. Hosmer, I can't believe he's got a 7-year, 140, 148 on the table. I would have taken it off the table. I'd just say, hey, why are you playing this game? Okay, we offered this. You don't want it. That's fine. Go get yourself a better deal. Because this one's off the table. You know, I know one was Kansas City. I'm surprised he didn't take that. That's the highest bid. It's from his old team.
I mean, I think the problem with Kansas City is that, I mean, Kansas City is looking to go through a pretty long rebuild. I mean, they're, you know, and cut a little bit of salary. It looks like they're going to try to re-sign him back. But, I mean, they don't really have anything to it looks like it's going to be, yeah, you'd re-sign. But I think Eric Hosmer thought a team like the Red Sox, a team like the Cardinals was going to come knocking on the door. He'd have a chance to go win right away. And right now he's basically choosing between the Royals, who look like they're going to have to start a rebuild all over again, and a team like the Padres, who are in the middle of a rebuild, who probably could be better quicker. But, I mean, again, you know, prospects aren't surefire. So, yeah, it's just it's one of those things. And not a lot of teams need first basemen, you know, I mean, or that need them who aren't paying them. I mean, Hosmer's probably better than Zimmerman, but, you know, the Nats can't move Zimmerman. I mean, no one's going to take his contract. So, I mean, you have a lot of these places where a lot of these guys are getting paid a lot of money. And, I mean, I also just don't think Hosmer – he's a good player, but he's not a great player, especially offensively.
Yeah.
He's not one of the best, you know, top five, top eight first basemen in the league. And he was looking, you know, and so he has a good reputation, and he's younger. He's still 28, you know. He's not 30, 31, but so if he gets a 6 or 7 year deal, you know, not the worst thing in the world. But, you know, I just think there's a limited market, and, you know, a lot of teams like the Indians who signed Alonso, and other teams have basically, you know, the Red Sox re-signed Mitch Moreland. They've basically said, you know, we're fine with the options we have. Instead of, we'd rather pay this guy, you know, $6-7 million a year than pay Hosmer, you know, $20-something million a year for the next 7.
Well, the Red Sox are going up against themselves with Hosmer. I mean, J.D. Martinez, first they offered him a 5-year $20 million, and then they said, oh, we'll give you a 5-year $125 million, but that's as high as we're going. I'm like, well, why don't you wait till someone else offers him more than $120 million? But they're bidding against themselves almost, but
yeah, I think Martinez is gonna eventually end up with the Red Sox. Again, really good player, been one of the best hitters in baseball the last 4 years. Mm-hmm. I understand there's issues about his fielding, but I mean, the guy has been, you know, I mean, the Nationals didn't have a guy like, you know, Michael A. Taylor. I'd probably, you know, say the Nationals should definitely go after him. But I mean, you know, it is what it is. I've always liked J.D. Martinez a lot, and he's been one of the most consistent. He's not like one of those guys who's coming off of one huge year like Moustakas or Hosmer is. He's a guy who has been basically – now he had the best stretch of his career the last 2 months with the Diamondbacks, but he's still somebody who's
right.
Really, really consistent.
I mean, you can see their frustration. They see a guy like Jason Hayward get $185 million. He can't hit a lick, but he's a, you know, very – he's above-average fielder. And he's a, you know, above-average base runner. But normally that doesn't make you almost a $200 million player. Normally it's the offensive guy. I mean, if you're going to have one strength, normally it's offense that will get you the money, not defense. You can find guys that play defense. There's more guys that can play defense that can hit a baseball. That's the hardest thing to do, is hit a baseball. And, I mean, that guy can rake. But he's not a 5-tool player, so he doesn't deserve the $200 million. You got to be able to do it all for me to be the $200 million. Of course, those guys are saying, well, those are $300 million players now. Well, we'll see. I mean, that is part of it, where some of these teams are still trying to hold on to some money for next year. They don't want to tie up some money. They want to, you know, keep the, you know, keep the possibility of going after Machado or Harper. There's no way Kershaw's going to opt out. I don't see that happening. Him opting out, but you never know.
I think he'll opt out. I mean, get more years. I mean, there'll be someone who's going to pay him a lot of money, at least more than what he has left on his contract. So, I mean, next year's free agency, he plays a part in it. But here's the thing: is I don't know how many teams are actually going to be in the bidding for Harper and Machado. Like, I mean, how many teams is that? Like 5 or 6? Like, you know, the
mm-hmm.
Yankees, the Dodgers, the Phillies, the Giants, the Nationals,
maybe the Brewers,
because Harper. Whew. Yeah, I don't think so. I mean,
I'm kidding on the Brewers. But what I heard good news about the Nationals is if, you know, they're thinking of, because I understood, they, you know, the money is only goes so far. But what I heard is that they're going to sell the ballpark's naming rights. They got a couple people lined up. And if that's, you know, $20, $25 million a year, that's money that could go to pay Harper. And I never thought of it that way. I always, you know, because I knew, you know, they're still struggling with the TV contract because they can't. I've never seen something take 5 or 6 years to settle. That's just ridiculous. That's just getting old quick that they can't settle, get an answer on the TV deal. But to save, to sell off, you know, they said Under Armour would be a possibility, or a couple of these defense contractors in Virginia be paying out, you know, $20, $25 million a year to put their name on that ballpark. I know Harper, Under Armour, you know, kind of goes together. So it'll be interesting to see there, but that would be the only way they could keep them. They're going to need that extra money coming in from somewhere.
Yeah,
else,
or he, I mean, I don't think he'll take a hometown discount, but I mean, maybe, and I don't know if this will be the case, but, you know, free agency has been a little dry this year, and maybe teams are just going to be like, look, we're not, you know, we love you, Bryce, but we'd rather give you 5 years, 200 instead of 10 years, 400, and then the Nationals are just like, hey, we'll give you the 10 years, 400, you know, for hometown's sake, and he ends up doing that. So, I mean, you know, it's very 50-50. I guess if I had to bet, I'd take the field. But, you know, there's not a lot of competitors. I mean, you know, a lot of people, he's been linked to the Dodgers in a sort of way. But, you know, the Dodgers, you know, as much as they had a big payroll, they were really trying to cut down on that. And they're going to be trying to re-sign Kershaw probably at the same time, too. You know, the Phillies, like, would he really go to a team that, you know, unless the Phillies improve this year, that it was a losing team? So, I just don't think he's going to have a lot of options unless somebody comes out of nowhere and does like what the Diamondbacks did with Greinke. But you can already see right now that Greinke's contract is hamstringing the Diamondbacks. So, and the Yankees were always a thought, but the Yankees have a crowded outfield, you know? No, I don't know. Maybe if they like moved off Ellsbury or something. But, I mean, out of Judge, Stanton, and Harper, none of those guys are center fielders. So, I mean, someone said the Giants are a possibility. I mean, again, the Giants are this old team that, you know, plays in a big ballpark. I mean, so it's just one of those things where I think the options will be limited, and that's the reason for optimism that Harper could be back. He could just go up to free agency and just realize, you know, I got three deals that are similar, and one's to the Phillies, and one's to the Giants, and one's to the Nationals.
Yeah, I mean, the Phillies have been overpaying everybody. I mean, they overpaid. That was a good move by Santana to sign early, get that $20 million a year for, you know, 3 years. That was a good deal. Good deal for him. But, that, you know, the 3 years was a good part for the Phillies. It's only a 3-year deal, but they did overpay him money-wise. But that's what you and I were talking about last week. I think we would see more of that, the annual number going up and the years going down. So to me, that's sort of what they did with Santana. But I know didn't they also sign Tommy Hunter?
They signed Hunter and they signed Pat Neshek.
Yeah. Hunter got like 2 years. He got $9 million a year. Jesus, Albers just got like a 2-year $5 million. I mean, and he was much better. I mean, the guy was awesome last year. They just say the Nats don't think he could do it again. I said, oh God, I mean. Why not? I mean, that's pretty cheap. I know I just think, to me, I mean, they just obviously, they really got this thing for Real Muto, which, I mean, I get it. He's really good, but you already got a catcher you're paying a lot of money to for one more year.
Yeah, I mean, I think
but they need a pitcher.
Well, when it comes to Real Muto, what's interesting is the Diamondbacks just signed Alex Avila, who is somebody the Nats were looking at, and they just signed him. And the Diamondbacks were one of the teams that were in on Real Muto, and so that's another suitor. That I mean, basically, this is what's going to come down to. The Nationals don't want to trade Robles or Soto. Soto, who now is the 29th prospect in baseball on MLB.com's new list. And the Marlins want at least one of them. And basically it's going to be, can the Nationals put together a list of guys who the Marlins like who are not named Robles or Soto? I mean, that's basically going to be it. And I think the Marlins could probably go and get a better offer. I mean, you'd have to have it, like, something like around, like, Keboom, Fetty, you know.
Right. That's what I saw. That's the deal
The guy they just drafted and Severino, you know. Because so the Marlins for the Brewers for Christian Yelich, who's on a longer deal and under more control, they got the Brewers number one, number four, number seven, and number, like, 18 prospect. And if the Nationals could send out their, like, number three, number four, number six, and number 15, I think that could work for Real Muto. But it really depends on how the Marlins like the Nationals guys. I mean, and I think for a guy – and they also are – they want an outfielder because their outfield is just so – I mean, they just traded their three outfielders, and they don't have any guys who can play. So – I know they asked for Taylor. The Nationals said no because obviously Taylor is someone they need to help win this year. So it'll be a standoff. It's just there's also just not a lot of teams who are looking for catchers. So are the Marlins eventually just going to blink and say, all right, we just need to get this deal done? Because, I mean, Real Muto has come out and said, look, I don't want to be here, and I don't blame them. But they're definitely like Yelich. They're going to try to milk it as much as possible.
I mean, they should. I just don't seem really Real Muto should take up. I think he's really good, but I think Yelich has already proven to do more so far. And I mean, Real Muto, this is really his best year he had, was just this past year. But his bat was never quite as good. I know they did some work on it. They got the swing guy, got his swing in a better position, and he started putting up some better numbers there. And he's, you know, super athletic. About as fast a catcher you'll see. I mean, I'd love to have him. But
yeah,
I'm just saying, we already have a catcher. They're paying a lot of money. What are you going to do with Wieters? What's Wieters going to be the backup? A $13 million backup?
Yeah.
I guess
you just swallow it for this year. I mean, maybe you send him to the Marlins somehow. I mean, they don't want to get any salary, but I don't know. Real Muto, But you know what? The Nationals don't necessarily need to get a catcher right now because they're going to probably win the release by like 15 games. They could go get one at the trade deadline if they need to. But I do think they want Real Muto if they can get him. But again, like, you know.
Sure.
If the Marlins are really set on Soto and Robles, who they seem very keen to keep, I mean, they're definitely not trying Robles, but, you know, especially Soto, then they're not going to get them, and then they'll wait it out. And I think that's probably smart by Rizzo. I mean, for the Nationals to have, like, the 15th ranked prospect base for a team that's been contending for about 5 or 6 years, I mean, I think that's pretty impressive on Rizzo's part. And, I mean, I know he technically only has 1 year left on his contract. I'd hope they get something done because he's been one of the better GMs in all of baseball, obviously. But Rizzo has always done a really good job of – and, you know, he's also – I mean, for the most part, his trade history is close to flawless. I mean, besides, like, I guess the Felipe Rivero trade this past last year, I mean, they haven't really lost the trade, per se, under his tenure.
Yeah, I mean, this word's still out on the, the trade with Detroit. I mean, the White Sox, but, you know, Lopez and
whoever else, the other pitcher, Giolito.
So
then time's out. Giolito. So times, you know, still take time to figure that one out. Yeah, you're not going to hit on all the trades. He's definitely solid. Ain't no doubt about it. You know, the learners are slow to sign people. They'll sign them unless they get into some kind of, you know, argument or something. But I still think they need the pitcher. I need the Alex Lynn. I mean, the Lance Lynn, Alex Cobb. I don't know. I just don't like the way that guy throws. I know he's solid. I just don't.
I knew Alex Lynn is struggling a little bit with the Suns, but I didn't think pitching would be what he was looking to do.
What's that?
No, you said Alex Lynn. Alex Lynn. I was like, I know he's struggling with the Suns a little bit, but I didn't think he'd be a pitcher.
Might as well try pitching. Yeah, 7'3" pitcher. I mean, that'd be amazing, but yeah. So now I work down in the Baltimore area now, Jimmy, and it's fun to listen to Baltimore sports. One thing I'll give them credit for is that they don't always talk about the Ravens, even though they kill the Ravens when they talk about them. They want everybody to go. If Flacco's got to go, Harbaugh's got to go. General manager's got to go. The Orioles are just—they just fed up with the Orioles because they ain't done nothing. I said, "What do you? Orioles are loving this. This is right down there. They love it.
They're one of three teams that hasn't spent a single dollar this offseason.
Yeah, they were just waiting for that price to keep coming down, baby. Right in the Orioles, yeah, it's working out pretty decent for them. They might actually be able to get somebody with these prices coming down. That's the way they like to roll. But yeah, they ain't got no pitching. They got their star players picked off at him. He didn't even show up at FanFest, Machado. You there, Jimmy? Jimmy. I lose you? Jimmy. Is that it for tonight? Jimmy, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry, I lost you for a sec.
Okay.
But yeah, Orioles pitching is Bundy, Gausman, and like three guys I've literally never heard of before. I mean, just like guys who aren't even triple A level guys who they're like expecting to roll out for the rotation. I mean, I've always said like if they just wanted to spend the money, they could get a guy like Darvish, they could get an Alex Cobb and Lance Lynn. You maybe even get two of them for the heck of it, and they could actually compete this year if they wanted to. But they just can't choose a direction. They should have either rebuilt or they should have gone for it this year, and they're doing neither. And that would just kill me as a fan. I mean, because if you think about it, they would have traded Britton before he tore his damn Achilles. If they would have traded Machado and traded Brock and traded Adam Jones, they could have gotten a pretty good haul back. But no, they just decided to stay put. I mean, it pisses me off, and I'm not even an Orioles fan. It's just the level of, you know, Peter Angelos, you know, he's an older guy. He's never wanted to rebuild, and he wants them to win in their lifetime. But, I mean, I don't know. They're always hamstrung by Angelos and by their weird physicals that nobody can ever pass for some reason. So it would definitely be frustrating for Orioles fans.
Yeah, I agree. No, it's just poorly run. I mean, it always starts at the top, you know. I mean, believe me, we know that. Almost all bad teams, it's the ownership's the problem. And definitely, it's a shame because they have a great ballpark. The fan base can be really good when you're good, but they're just frustrated, so they don't show up. And they were so close. I mean, they really had some bashers. They had some offense. They just needed to get themselves, spend a little money and get a couple pitchers. I mean, they have the relief pitcher. They just needed a couple starters. They were there. They were on the doorstep. And you had the young stud and Machado, and they just couldn't do it. And you can't, and I mean, I'm listening to some guy, you know, blaming Duquette. I said, you can't blame the general manager. He's just happy to have his job because, you know, it's a nice paying job, even if he doesn't let you do anything. I mean, here he puts these deals together, and then they get blown up by the last minute because the owner says, no, 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 no. You know, so, you know, he's handcuffed. I can't believe Showalter, what's his name? The coach?
Buck Showalter.
Showalter. Yeah, I can't believe he's such a really good coach, and he just puts up with that crap there. But again, he gets paid really well, even if it's, you know, he does the best he can. And I mean, a lot of teams would like to have him as a manager. I'm with you. I'm not a fan, so. But I just kind of work down that way now, so it's just funny to listen to the sports channel. I just like to listen to them because it makes me feel good that they're just bashing, you know, their teams. You know, here they just, you would think they've just been happy to have a football team after all those years they didn't have one. Fans get spoiled quick. You know, you win a couple championships and then you have a couple. Yeah, it's really hard to stay on top. You know,
there's plenty of fans. How many fans do you know who have said, oh, just please give me one championship. I'll never complain ever again. Please, just this one time. And that lasts for about a year, and then people start complaining again. I mean, you know, and with the Ravens, I mean, Joe Flacco's contract has definitely been a problem, but so is the fact that their general manager has not drafted well the last 4 or 5 years. And if you look at the teams that are good and you look at the teams that are bad, the teams that are good are the guys who drafted well. And, I mean, under the Redskins during their small portion of success, it was because a lot of McLuhan's picks were turning out. And for the Ravens, they had a draft history from 1996 when they drafted Ray Lewis and Jonathan Ogden in the same draft to 2012 when they won a Super Bowl. And then since then, they just haven't drafted. I mean, they have nobody left in their 2013 draft class. You want to know why they kind of suck? Well, they don't suck. I mean, they were 9-7. I mean, that's the other thing is, you know, and they missed the playoffs off a game they probably should have won. But at the end of the day, I mean, you know, John Harbaugh was fired tomorrow. There's teams that would fire their coach to hire John Harbaugh and give him a lot of money. I mean, you know, I think that team is worse than a 9-7 team. I think they're like 6-10, but John Harbaugh is a really good coach, and he brings a lot out of that team.
I agree. Amazing
job. If John Harbaugh was fired tomorrow, if I was the Browns, I would fire Hugh Jackson, give John Harbaugh I wouldn't give him John Gruden money, but, you know, I don't know, maybe if that's what it would take, you know. But yeah, I mean, I think he's a good coach. I think they win despite Flacco, and I think it's hard. It's really hard to coach when you don't have a quarterback that's playing well. I mean, Flacco, he had a couple good games toward the end of the year to help him get back in it, but besides that, I mean, he was pretty putrid this year. So they just haven't drafted well, and it just shows that some of their best players are still older veterans for the most part. So, you know, Suggs is still their best pass rusher. Their best receiver is 30-year-old Mike Wallace. You know, they did good getting Alex Collins, getting him. But besides that, I mean, there's plenty of reason the Ravens have struggled. And, you know, I think a lot of people want to blame John Harbaugh, but I still think he's a really good coach. I think both of the Harbaughs are really good coaches.
I agree. I'd fire my Gruden in a heartbeat and hire Harbaugh. I just like the way special teams play. I mean, they just amaze me how well they play. I mean, they
he was a special teams coach.
I think that's what got them to 9-7, and honestly, instead of 7-9, is their special has won two games, flipped a couple games. That's how good they are.
Yeah.
And Redskins haven't had good special teams in forever.
Helps when you have like the best kicker in the league and one of the best punters as well too. But they also, you know, don't give up a lot of mistakes punt return wise and things like that. So.
Right.
No,
the whole package on special teams, right. They have the best kicker. Punters awesome, but they protect, they attack. I like it. I like them. Spoiled.
Yeah, they're definitely a little bit spoiled, but they can deal with it. I think that's gonna probably do it for tonight. It was good talking to you.
Yeah, sounds good.
Luckily, we had that big Alex Smith trade to talk about, like right before.
Definitely didn't expect it, but
we'll see how it works out for both teams.
Not that I was watching the president's speech anyway, but that just took my full focus off of the president's speech. So it worked out really well for me.
I was going to pay zero attention to that, and I did anyway. So I'd rather not spend my Tuesday night than watching Donald Trump give a public speech. But exactly. I mean, policies are not the dude is a terrible public speaker. I will talk to you next week, most likely. If not, we'll see. But it's always nice talking to you, man.
Yep, same here, buddy. Take care.
All right. That's Dave, who joins me every week. Again, thank you guys for listening to Seatman on Sports Podcast. My name is Jimmy Seatman. Follow me on Twitter @J_Seatman. Everybody have a great night, and we have a lot to look forward to.